The following podcast is a production of Institutional Real Estate Incorporated. Before beginning our program, we would like to invite you to sign up for a free trial subscription to one of our publications at irei.com. Whether you are interested in real estate, infrastructure, or real assets in general, IREI has a publication to suit your needs. Select Publications on the main menu to choose a publication. Interested in more than one? Sign up for them all.
I'm Mike Consul.
And I'm Loretta Klotfelter.
Welcome to a new episode of Inside the Edition. Loretta, what do you have this month?
Well, we're looking at the July-August issue. We do a double issue in the summer. And let's talk about one of the features. I wrote a story about co-working trends. So it's called The Evolution of Sharing. Office landlords are launching co-working initiatives to cater to changing tenant desires. And what we do is we kind of look at a few different companies, traditional office companies, that are looking at different ways to integrate co-working into their traditional office offering.
Oh, so this, okay, interesting. So this would be a new trend. I mean, we think of WeWork. But you're saying that there's companies that are actually going to use this model internally?
Right, well, there's a few different ways to approach it. So, you know, WeWork, right now one of the things WeWork is doing is actually trying to grow its business beyond, you know, the startup, the two-person, to more enterprise offerings. And at the same time, you have traditional companies looking to go in the other direction. So one really great example, and many companies are doing this, but CBRE has actually launched a co-working initiative. They call it HANA, and it is just a straight-up WeWork competitor that, you know, they've developed this concept that can then be rolled out in, you know, any office anywhere in the country. They've actually got, I think one of their first properties is going to be a building in Dallas that's owned by MetLife and being developed by MetLife and Trammell Crow. So it's called the PwC Tower. And, you know, this is this brand new office building in Dallas. And among the many tenants will be this HANA concept, which is a WeWork competitor. At the other end of the spectrum, we're starting to see other office landlords maybe just roll out a single co-working, like an internally run co-working effort, maybe just at a single property that is troubled in some way, or that they want to create some sort of energy or buzz around that particular asset. So, you know, instead of rolling out an entire initiative, you might be just saying, you know, we own this building. It's, it's got high vacancy. We're struggling to attract tenants. Let's develop a co-working concept here, you know, and that will kind of create some energy around the property. And what they actually find is that those companies that come in, you know, and again, we're talking often, you know, sort of the small, the one to two person, they might graduate out of co-working into their own space within that same building or another building owned by that landlord.
You know, it's such a interesting topic. It's such a big topic these days. There's a lot of talk about it. But it all kind of, maybe I don't understand the concept quite right, but a company like HANA and WeWork, they're basically subletting space, right? So what's the magic of subletting the space? What does it do for the leasee? Like if I go to WeWork and get office space, what does it do for me that I can't do when I just go grab the space myself? I suppose are they providing an array of services?
It's the amenities. It's the amenities. And the key, you know, the real thing to think about with co-working is you almost want to think about it on a hospitality model. So this is almost like a hotel level of service for an office space. So, you know, if you think about a traditional office rental situation, when you are leasing space from a traditional office landlord, You are generally leasing kind of an empty room,
mm-hmm.
and that has to be built out. You know, the TI, the tenant improvement, can be a big cost. You might take you 6 months to get that space set up the way you want with, you know, you're bringing in all the different things. And, yeah, you can customize it to have it exactly the way you want. But for a lot of companies, they don't want to spend 6 months or whatever getting customized. They want to just be able to have a turnkey experience where you just walk in, the desks are already there, the room's already lit, the everything's on site. And then, you know, if you've ever been to a WeWork space, you know, it really is like the level of hospitality and service. You know, this is, you know, they make jokes about the cold brew and the beer on tap, but it really is that level of just everything taken care of so that you, as a company, as an office tenant, don't have to think about any of those details. And for some companies, that's really attractive. And with that in mind, a lot of office landlords are starting to think, hey, you know, why should I be subletting to WeWork when I could do this myself? You know, another one we look at in the article, Tishman Speyer has launched a studio initiative. And so unlike CBRE's effort, which will be both at companies owned perhaps by CBRE Global Investors, but could also be rolled out, you know, in other places, studio is very much going to be dedicated to properties already owned, you know, so it's within the owner's portfolio. And all of these people, you know, I talked to a number of people. You know, every person I talked to was like, we're not going to stop working with WeWork. We love WeWork. We can't wait to get more WeWork. But we also are doing this ourselves. You know, why let them do it all when we can also get involved? But, and this is really the key, you really have to be thinking about what the tenant desires and how to deliver that.
So for the tenant, for this a company that's moving into WeWork or Hana Space or some other competitor, they're going to pay a premium, it sounds, versus just leasing the space themselves, but they're willing to pay that premium because of the concierge-style services that the hotel, or as you said, the hospitality-type services. Is that what's driving? I mean, what is driving the trend? I mean, obviously, what you described is mouthwatering, okay? It's just like there's the beer on tap, there's the cold brew coffee, you know, there's people there to help you or to wait on you, so to speak, versus just going, like you said, it, most places it is, you lease space and then you walk into an empty place, an empty room, and you've got to figure out how to make it like a home, like a home office.
And you've had to make a 10-year commitment.
What is the commitment with a WeWork or a Hana?
Daily, monthly, you know, you depending on the contract. But yeah,
really?
It's,
okay. It can be as short as just a daily or like a few weeks. We need space for a few weeks and then we're done.
That's the advantage of co-working is that it's all about flexibility. You know, it's fast to move in, it's fast to move out. You know, it can be something that you don't have to necessarily commit to a particular place. There's a lot of advantages for the user, and it really reflects sort of our changing conception of what it means to be a business or an office employee.
Now, you don't get flexibility with the space. It's kind of generic space, I would imagine. So if you're a company that has specifications on how you need things configured, then you would lease your own space and you would do the TIs, the tenant improvements, so that it's suited exactly to your company. Is that right? But WeWork works, or Hana, works for almost everybody else. Is that kind of the case?
Well, yes, although, like I said, you know, WeWork is trying to attract more mid-sized and enterprise clients. And, you know, when I also spoke with one of the people at Tishman who's rolling out their studio initiative, they're offering both, you know, this sort of studio concept, which is, you know, their answer to WeWork, and you're putting it in. But like a lot of other landlords, they're also offering it kind of as a white, you know, kind of under a white label, unbranded situation where you can actually, as a user, as a company can come to them and say, we'd like this whole floor, but we want the co-working concept, but we want to put up our own logo and have it seem like our space, but we don't want to do anything. And they're like, yeah, we can do that. You know, and so that's this trend that a lot of owners are realizing that the traditional office model doesn't work for a lot of companies. For some companies, it works great. Like, don't get me wrong. The vast majority of office space is still being moved along traditional lines. But a growing number of companies, even larger companies, want the hospitality-driven service, the flexible terms, that you're going to get in a co-working environment. And I really do think that this is going to be an ongoing trend. You're really going to see this driving a lot of what happens in the office space. One of the interesting things that people are really asking about now is security, in particular digital security. So, you know, that is a big concern, and that is something that the various co-working concepts are really working hard to establish a level of digital security and, you know, sort of that level of, you know, data safety, because that's really something, you know, companies, one of the reasons why you might want to have your own space that you have, you know, more or less kind of locked down on your own is that you can then control your IT and really guarantee its security. And so, you know, that's something that these co-working offerings are really focusing on, how they can provide that same level of cybersecurity.
So talk a little bit, to begin, before I get to that, actually, because people can move in for days or weeks or a few months, they're attracting clients that wouldn't otherwise even be eligible for an office building, it sounds like, even as they're pursuing the enterprise, the big clients that are going to sign longer-term leases and are going to provide that kind of the anchor, that stability, they are attracting a lot of smaller players that otherwise don't fit into the office space model because landlords want a bigger commitment than that, at least the traditional landlords.
Yeah, I mean, you can actually say that to a certain extent, you know, co-working, WeWork, they're competing with Starbucks. You know, and that's, you know, that if somebody wasn't, you know, if they weren't attracting some of these smaller, you know, entrepreneurs, startups, you know, where else would they go? They'd be, you know, doing the classics, found a company in your garage, or they'd be, you know, working out of a coffee shop.
So talk about the amenities. I feel like I should be sipping a beer during this discussion after you mentioned it, but it's 10 a.m. in the morning, so we're not going to be doing that.
Cold brew coffee, though.
You know, it's probably Starbucks coffee, too, so it's like nobody's going to miss the Starbucks because they'll have it there for you, and they'll have a good premium beer. What are some of the other amenities that are real attractive for you know, professionals and companies?
Right. So one of the things, you know, you really want to think about, you know, as I mentioned, sort of the sort of hospitality concierge level service. So it is, yes, you know, you want to have that level of drinks and snacks, but that's sort of like the basic. That now everybody is like, oh, you know, we got to have the beer on tap. And I mean, how much do you really want your employees drinking a beer at, as you said, 10 in the morning. But, you know, the next level is really about taking care of all of the details of an office, all of the office management tasks, all of the things that are required to keep a building, you know, keep a space going. You know, it replaces the office manager. It just moves that, outsources that and has somebody else take care of all those details. And then, you know, the other thing that, again, I mentioned security and then acoustics are an important element. And you will see, you know, a lot of these spaces are not just big open rooms, but you'll have a lot of, you know, dedicated little offices with a door. You've got, you know, really, you know, so having that sort of volume, you know, noise control is something that they're really looking at. And you know, these are the sort of things that you're offering. You can also talk about, you know, something like, you know, on-site fitness, yoga, massage, all of these are things that can be included or rolled out or made available. It really just does depend on the owner, the site, and their own imagination, honestly. We're going to see a lot of interesting new developments in this area.
Interesting. So I see you mentioned the July-August edition, which is the one we're talking about, and I see another headline here on mass timber is poised to be faster, cheaper, and greener than traditional construction materials. What is mass timber?
So mass timber is, it's an engineered wood product.
Sounds like GMO.
You'll also see it called CLT or cross-laminated timber. But what we're talking about is timber that has been, in general, it's been formed and pressed into panels. It's laminate, with a certain amount of laminate.
Composite material?
Yeah, but it's still wood. But what it is what we're going to see, this is going to be huge. It's already starting to take off, especially in the Pacific Northwest. But because of certain changes to the new building codes coming out, I think it's the 2021. The 2021 International Code Council of the International Building Codes, they're coming out with some new rules that will make it much easier to build much taller buildings exclusively out of wood, and that's really being driven by this mass timber construction. So you can really think of it to a certain extent almost like Legos to a certain extent. I mean, these panels, you just, knock this building into shape. You can build them much faster than a traditional building. And because it's faster, that makes it cheaper. Because, as you know...
Why is it greener, though?
I'll get to that.
Okay.
We're still on cheaper.
How do you... these things snap into place. The Lego set snaps into place. Go ahead with the cheaper. What makes it cheaper?
It's
or
faster.
Less expensive, we should say.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah,
well,
faster makes it cheaper.
Faster makes it cheaper because every day you spend building a building costs money. The other thing is that because the pieces are built in a factory and then brought to the site, you don't need as much labor, and labor costs are a huge issue with building expenses right now. It also means that you aren't, needing imported steel because these buildings aren't, comparing it to, your traditional steel and concrete building, it doesn't have the same elements. So, and then you ask about the greener. Well, so there's different ways of measuring it, but one thing to keep in mind is that building out of wood means you're not building out of concrete, and cement is... something like 8% of global emissions in 2016 came from cement production. It's pretty easy to forget that it's a huge carbon producer. The production of that. So the other thing that people talk about in relation to mass timber is this idea of carbon sequestration. And so you're gonna see different people talk about whether or not carbon sequestration really matters for this question. But the idea is that this carbon is in the trees. The trees absorb the carbon dioxide, they hold the carbon dioxide, and then instead of burning the tree to release the carbon dioxide, you are then holding all of that carbon inside a building. And so it's been sequestered. So it's this, and I think the people who are very, very much in favor of mass timber are very excited about, we'll talk at length about carbon sequestration. Some of the, you'll also see other people say, well, it doesn't really have that big of an effect, and, is this really as green as it's claiming? And so you do see some back and forth on that element.
Because it sounds like they're adding things to the wood. Like, for instance, when wood goes to a landfill, hopefully it wouldn't. It could be recycled in some fashion. But if it, you know, obviously wood finds its way into landfills, and it's wood. It's natural. This sounds like it's got, you mentioned laminate, it's got some kind of chemistry involved in it. And but, you know.
No one seems especially concerned about that detail. That's not really an element that concerns people.
Is this stronger than regular wood? This is why we
can
start
stronger. So unlike regular wood, you can build 18-story building out of this stuff.
And more fire resistant, maybe?
It is believed to be more fire resistant under certain tests because of the way it's built. It should be more fire resistant than traditional wood. And so because of this, you're seeing, because these CLT buildings, cross-laminated timber, we're starting to see in the International Building Codes are rolling out new regulations for how tall and how big these CLT buildings can be. And you know, they're saying 18 stories, which is, you know,
that's
a building made of wood 18 stories high.
Yeah.
You know, that's just not something that we have seen up to this point. In fact, a lot of building codes have historically had real limits on the height of wood buildings, partly because of the concerns about fire danger. And so, you know, you're really not seeing much more than, you know, if you look around, you know, the traditional, a lot of that sort of mid-rise apartments, for instance, that are being built are very much built with that code in mind, which usually limits them to about 4 or 5 stories, depending on the place. So, you know, being able to build a wood building, a wood structure that is much taller than previously, you know, that could have some really positive effects for density. For, you know, this is why, you know, one of the things people are really excited about is just you know, people who are concerned about, you know, housing affordability, this is a way to build taller, and that too can have sort of a positive effect.
Interesting. So are these the traditional lumber companies or timber players, or are these insurgent companies that are producing this product, or is it both?
Both. I would say both. One of the big names in this space is a company called Katerra. But, you know, so they're a new tech startup that is now one of the big players in this CLT space.
Interesting. So you mentioned Pacific Northwest is where this is really starting to take off. Pacific Northwest is big, yeah, it's lumber territory. Is that why, or is there something else going on?
You know, I think that is a big driver. And then the fact that, you know, so, you know, is that why it's taking off? Well, one of the things is that both, you know, Oregon and Washington have, they've signed on to these new building codes in a way that, for instance, California has not yet. You know, so it's sort of a matter of how quickly do you adopt these building codes. And, you know, in California, there's a lot of concerns about earthquake safety, so building codes in California can be very different from that angle.
So it's a state-by-state issue as well. I mean, for instance, California might be a laggard as far as this goes for that reason.
It could be. I was reading something actually this very morning, actually, a discussion on mass timber. And, for instance, in San Francisco, there's some real concern about earthquake and fires after an earthquake. And while the CLT product has been shown in a lot of studies to be more fire resistant than traditional wood, it sounds like there's going to be perhaps a politically slower adoption in California, perhaps, than there has been. You know, Portland is very, very much one of the epicenters. And then when I said Pacific Northwest, Vancouver, Canada, has actually been a big player in this. And then the other thing is, you know, just to keep my Europe, Germany has been one of at the forefront of CLT adoption.
You know, so many new products, they come out and then people love the product and they want more of it, and they say, you know, it's a great product. The problem is we can't produce enough of it to meet demand. Is this the kind of product that can be mass produced at a scale that it will meet the demand? Because there's you stop and think about construction, all the wood that that the demands of timber and finished wood products, can it meet that demand? Is there any indication of that yet?
Well, I think right now it's meeting what demand is available. If demand, you know, grows exponentially, will it be able to meet that demand? You know, I'm not sure what sort of scale plans are in place in order to build. I mean, you do need a certain amount of wood harvested. You need the factories in place to develop this product and to engineer it. So, you know, that could certainly be a limit at some point as it develops.
Mm-hmm. Or they just need time to scale. Demand could surge and they need time to scale up, and then they get to the point where they can meet whatever demand exists, one would hope. Anyway, as usual, Loretta, you pick interesting and enlightening topics. Great discussion, and we will see you next month.
All right.